This evening we're talking to Steve Saunders, who is chairman of the Mock Convention. Throughout the years, the Mock Convention has been noted for its reputation for accuracy. Only four times in the past 13 conventions has there been an error. To what do you attribute this remarkable feat?
Well, first of all, the convention is instructed and trained to not so much reflect the individual prejudice and preference of the WNL students participating, so much as to actually reflect the decision that the real delegates are going to make two months afterward when the actual convention is held. Now, it's always held for the party out of power, and so for the last two conventions, it has been a Republican convention. The preparations for the 68 convention began in 1964 with the appointment of an interim coordinating committee, which maintained contact with state organizations and established the files of data that are going to be used by the state chairman to help them keep their roles as accurate and as authentic as possible.
Besides the serious side of the convention, which is fairly well known, there are a lot of festivities going on. What in the way of lively entertainment has been planned?
Well, there are several scheduled events as part of the convention program I think you're talking about that do provide lighter moments, the first of which is the parade, which begins the whole series of events known as the Mock Convention. That'll be on Friday afternoon, May 3rd of 1968, and will commence at Lexington High School, proceed down to Main Street by the Mayflower, and then up toward the northern part of town, and then down on Washington Avenue, past the freshman dorm, to the convention hall, which is otherwise known as Doremus Gymnasium. This became almost a tragic occasion in 1960 when the members of the Florida delegation began hurling oranges at President Harry S. Truman, who was the keynoter that year and who was on the reviewing stand with former President Fred C. Cole. If it wasn't for President Cole's agility in fielding these oranges, most of which were hurled at fastball speeds, there might have been a repeat of the tragedy of 1956 when Truman's vice president, Alvin Barkley, collapsed and died when speaking to the mock convention. There are usually and traditionally, and from the standpoint of the convention managers, regrettably, innumerable and it's seemingly unending cocktail parties and receptions and beer rallies for the 2 weeks preceding the convention in behalf of one candidate or another. In the 64 convention, Governor Rockefeller gave almost a carte blanche to his managers here, and for the, I think, 2 weeks before the convention, or something like that, Doc's, affectionately known as the Corner Grill, served free beer to all comers. Now, that kind of thing may or may not be repeated this time, but certainly that'll add color to the convention. We're also trying to work out some kind of athletic event on Thursday, which will guarantee that at least some portion of the WNL community will be sober prior to the convention. And of course, there will be the regular floor demonstrations, which are always very colorful, and the other hoopla that goes along with any political convention.
How are plans coming to get elephants to lead the parade?
Well, last time they came from a circus in somewhere in Ohio, and we're hoping to get them from the same source this time. Of course, they travel in pairs because apparently elephants get lonely, and we're expecting that to have at least two, and we hope four for this convention. But the rising cost of living have upped the prices of elephants, and we don't know how many pounds of pachyderm we're going to get for our money, but well, there's a good chance that we will have four elephants this time.
Well, I certainly hope that they don't participate in some of the beer rallies, cocktail parties that you've mentioned.
Well, no, they were kind of exempt from that last time. In 1964, not only did they not drink anything, but we couldn't even get them to go near water. They tried to wash them because they had a rather distinctive odor. Yes, that some of the people who were scheduled to ride them, like Congressman Poff, objected to, but with some vigor, and they didn't really submit to a washing. And although the boys involved with that sort of thing spent about an hour and a half trying to do it with each of them, they still remained as fragrant as ever. And those who watched the parade that year from the galleries along Main Street have a pungent reminder of just what they did smell like.
This all sounds like it's going to cost a lot of money. How do you propose to raise it?
Well, it'll cost about $16,000, including the money spent by state delegations. We're going to be raising it through direct solicitation of parents, through gifts from interested alumni, and particularly this year, through a source that we've never had before. That is a student body assessment, which was collected at the beginning of registration and which assessed each student a special tax of $2 for the mock convention. In addition to this, we're selling advertising in the convention journal or program that will net us about $3,000 or $4,000. So we're not too worried about the finances. We're ahead of the fundraising schedule which was carried out by the 64 convention, and there's no need for alarm right now. Of course, in 2 months, if things don't pick up, I probably will be crawling the walls, but as of now, we're in good shape, and we're making good progress toward raising all of that $16,000.
What exactly is the schedule of events for the convention?
Well, it's going to be held on Friday and Saturday, May 3rd and 4th of 1968. And although there'll be some minor competition from something called the Kentucky Derby on Saturday the 4th, we're hoping to keep at least some of the Kentucky students here for the convention. It begins at noon on Friday the 3rd with the traditional parade, in which every delegation is expected to enter a float. I understand there are also several commercial floats that will be entered, and some somewhat more jocular private jokes that will be part of the parade, which were similar in inspiration to the Mafia float entered in the 64 effort, which ran Dr. Ed Side, the Lexington's most colorful entrepreneur and manager-owner of the Stately Lyric Theater, for President of the United States. After that, the session will begin in Doremus Gymnasium with the keynote address, and possibly with a floor fight on some convention plank or over seating of delegates. This we're calling the hypothetical situation, and will only be known to myself, Tom Barrymore, who is Director of State Delegations, and Staff Keegan, who is Chairman of the Republican National Committee for the Mock Convention, and who also doubles as the Chairman of Contact for 1968, which is being held in conjunction with the Mock Convention, although 4 months earlier. Then the balloting for president will begin Friday night, the nominations for president. This usually spills over till Saturday morning, and the roll call for President of the United States is usually completed on Saturday. The nominee is notified by telephone and usually delivers some short message to the delegates in Doremus Gymnasium via a special telephone loudspeaker hookup. In 1964, when Senator Goldwater was nominated, he was available at a phone, and he delivered a six-minute acceptance address and designated Governor Scranton of Pennsylvania as his choice for a running mate. We have never tried or even attempted, and certainly haven't been successful at, predicting the vice presidential nominees. I think since 1908, we've only picked the vice presidential nominee once correctly. And so I don't think there's any chance that we're going to break that record. The convention usually adjourns sine die on Saturday afternoon. I think this year's will probably be a little shorter.
Well, I know with the vice presidential nomination, it's often dictated by changes or events that occur at the convention.
That's right. They usually rush through the vice presidential nominations. By that time, unfortunately, at least one-fourth of the delegates are incapacitated through the ravages of time, late hours, and
demon rum.
So I think I said it would probably be shorter because we're going to be running longer sessions on Friday. But in fact, there will be more hours and more time spent in the convention hall, that is Doremus Gymnasium, than at any other convention.
Who are some of the Republican leaders that have been contacted to serve as keynoters and other speakers?
Well, we haven't yet secured a keynoter. We've been turned down by some of the most outstanding men in the Republican Party today, and a list of the people we've been invited and turned down by reads like a roll call of Young America. But we are still pursuing a keynoter. I think we're going to get a very good one, and I don't really feel at liberty at this time to make any mention of his name until he is confirmed. For CONTACT, which is, as I mentioned before, being held in conjunction with the mock convention, Staff Keegan, who's chairman of CONTACT, has signed Senator Barry Goldwater, or rather former Senator Barry Goldwater, and also Senator Thurston Morton of Kentucky, to speak at that event, which is scheduled this year, next year for February. I think we're going to have an outstanding slate of speakers. We'll probably have three, as in past years, and I think that we will not have to lower our sights any more than the standard that's been set in previous years when we've had such outstanding speakers as a former Representative Walter Judd of Minnesota, President Harry Truman, Vice President Alvin Barkley, and so on. So I think we can look forward to a good keynote address and some outstanding Republicans present at the convention, both as speakers and as advisors to the state delegations. As far as I know now, there will be at least five state chairmen, state Republican chairmen in real life, coming down here for the convention to participate with the W&L delegation that bears their state name.
With the increasing closeness of the country through, you know, rapid communications, do you think that, you know, events like W&L My Convention and the New Hampshire primary, because they're publicized more, do you think that we might have an effect on the national scene?
Well, there's no denying that most candidates, especially since our success in our multiple successes since 1952, want very much to win the mock convention nomination. It's gotten a great deal of favorable publicity. We can usually count on extensive coverage in most Southern daily newspapers, and we have come to depend on significant coverage for a school of our size in the national news magazines. As far as this possibility of influencing the actual convention, I would say that the influence that the mock convention exerts is minimal. I think, I forgot who described it. It might have been Eric Severide. He called it the time-life syndrome, where time goes out to Iowa and polls 150 farmers on what farmers in the Midwest think. They print it in Time magazine, and then a farmer in Kansas 3 weeks later reads it and finds out what farmers in the Midwest think, and then when the Time interviewer comes to him, he just repeats what he read in Time magazine. So I don't really think that you're going to find much evidence of that, although the convention is prestigious, and it's prestigious because it's proved to be consistently accurate in the 13 times we've held it since 1908.
Well, the Republican Party seems to be experiencing a resurgence, and I was wondering, you know, just on a personal basis, who you consider some of the prominent candidates to be.
Well, of the prominent candidates that are obvious to all, certainly Governor Romney is not to be counted out yet, although his recent flirtation with the brainwashing accusation has certainly hurt him. The former Vice President Nixon is certainly very strong, and I think he is going to be a significant force in the convention. Although not many people perhaps are willing to admit it now, I think Governor Rockefeller of New York is going to exert a surprising amount of pressure on the convention and may be one of its major figures.
Well, Steve, it's about time to conclude. Thank you very much for being with us tonight.
I've enjoyed talking to you.
Kirk?
Yes?
This is Larry Hynek at Washington Lee University.
I know it is. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. It was certainly nice of you to give us this interview.
Well, I'm delighted. By gosh, I'm coming up there.
Yes, sir. We're looking forward to that.
The closest I can be, will be a Washington Lee man.
Yes, sir. Listen, would it be all right with you if we record this interview?
Oh, sure.
Is that all right? Good. Thank you.
Sir? Yeah,
go ahead. Oh, thank you. I have a few questions to ask you, if I'll just go ahead and start. Is that all right with you?
Why don't I just answer your questions and do as best I can?
Fine, thank you. The first one is, do you believe Senator Smathers is going to retire next year?
Well, we've been given every assurance by the senator in his constant statements that he is going to retire. I only have one misgiving, and that was when he made the statement a few months ago that he felt like his health might return to him in time to run for the governorship in 1970. Sounds to me like if he's going to feel that good in 1970, he might feel a little bit better in 1968.
Do you see from both parties as possible contenders for the seat, or who do you see?
Well, the Democratic Party, of course, has got its two so far registered contenders, Mr. Leroy Collins, former governor of the state, and the present attorney general of the state, Mr. Faircloth, and there is some continued rumor that the chairman of the Board of Regents, who is not supposed to be a political being, but I really believe he is running, is the major candidate for senator.
What about the Republican Party?
His name is Chester Ferguson, by the way.
Thank you.
The Republican Party has, so far it would appear that, and I think this is probably what's going to transpire, that very attractive Congressman Gurney from Orange County, which is Orlando, will probably announce someday soon that he will be a candidate and will then make the race and will be elected the United States Senator from Florida.
Yes, sir.
He is from Maine, a graduate of Harvard, I believe, a very brilliant 52-year-old attorney with a tremendous war record in World War II, seriously wounded, so much so that he still has difficulty in walking and sitting. Handsome and articulate. You can't beat all those things. Plus, he's just an excellent congressman.
Well, what prospects do you see for expansion of the Republican Party in the South?
Well, we're not concerned about the South. We are Florida, which happens to be geographically located in the South. I'm from Alabama, and quite frankly, we like to think that we're members of the United States. And as the Republican Party expands in the nation, it also will be expanding in the various states which are also located in the South. Somehow or another, I hear people say South with a kind of tongue-in-cheek sort of thing, like we're some retarded group. And I object to that. And I point out that Florida, of course, is the eighth state in the nation, and well in advance of some of the other geographically located states that are in other positions.
Yes,
all the
sir.
Way down to number 50.
Do you see any possibility of the Republican Party recapturing the Negro bloc vote?
Well, I would hate to think there was such a thing as any kind of bloc vote. In Florida, we don't have white people or Negroes. We have 6 million Floridians. And I think we don't appeal to blocs down here. Now, maybe that's the order of the day in the northern districts. Of Mayor Daley's area, where the president seems to think it's so important that he has the convention. Inasmuch as the Democratic Party wanted to be in meeting for convention purposes in Miami and so voted, but apparently the president subscribes to your approach that there are such things as bloc votes, and therefore he put it in Chicago. We don't subscribe to that in Florida.
Yes, sir.
Or in the Republican Party. We think Americans are Americans.
People have cautioned the Republican Party that if it nominates a candidate with a stronger position on Vietnam than Johnson, the communists will take action to ensure Johnson's reelection.
Well,
in light of Khrushchev's bragging
of these people are.
I'm not sure either, but I've heard it before, and we just wondered that in light of Khrushchev's bragging about Nixon's defeat, what do you think about this? Is it possible?
Oh, I think that's some wishful thinking on the part of some very ultra-liberal writer of some sort that can't think of anything else to say or do.
Okay.
Quite frankly, unless you can establish the person, time, and place, I doubt if anybody that wants to vouch for his name ever said that.
All right, we won't worry
well,
about
I
that.
I say that exactly the way I said it. I'm for popping these. You know, the easiest thing to float and the hardest thing to sink is a rumor.
Senator Tower of Texas and you are recognized as possible vice presidential candidates from the South. Do you see any others from that area?
I'm not a vice presidential candidate from the South. And I'm tired of being identified as that, and just because I'm a Southerner. We Southerners are a little upset with this continued segregation. We're not second-class citizens down here, and if you think a man is capable of being vice president one breath from being president, then you must think he's capable of being president. We all know that there is no way that a man can campaign for vice president. We all know that the president picks his vice presidential candidate. So I think that's just so much segregation sort of talk that here's a couple of good guys, and we will let them be gun bearers, but we won't ever let them be hunters. And quite frankly, I don't subscribe to that. I'm not a candidate for either office. But if you're going to talk about it, let's let us be candidates on equality with people from other areas. As an example, how many people are in Michigan?
How many people are in Michigan?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, there are 8.5 million. Why is the governor of Michigan any better than the senator from Texas? I'm not trying to create a quarrel. I'm just trying to show you what's the difference.
No, I see your point.
I have 6 million people here. To pick another extreme, Mr. Goldwater was senator from a state that has 1.5 million. I don't think the size or location of states got anything to do with it. And I could continue on that vein if you like, but you see the logic of the numbers and
the
situation.
I sure do. Well, let me go on to the next question then.
Now, you must admit, of course, that a governor of the state of New York, your governor of the state of California, the number one state in the nation by numbers, is automatically catapulted into the presidential consideration. You may remember all the time that Governor Warren was governor. He was always mentioned. Pat Brown was always mentioned for some position. So those are realistic. That's all right.
A supposed handicap of a Rockefeller Kirk or a Rockefeller-Reagan ticket is that all have been divorced. Do you feel that this is or could become a handicap in a presidential race?
Oh, I don't think that that's any handicap. I think we're talking about electing a man on his ability to administer a state or a nation and not his ability to live with a woman. Quite frankly, I think if you... then on that basis, you'd never elect a bachelor either. And you might point out that, quite frankly, my 18 years of marriage, and I don't know about the others, resulted in 4 lovely children. I'll stake my 4 children against the president's 2 any day you want to. on quality of a person or bearing or beauty, you name it. So I'll stake any one of my marriages against anybody else, if that's the criteria. Quite frankly, I think Americans are over that. And also, you might be interested to know that if all the Americans and their families who've been touched by divorce were to all get behind the divorce candidate, if that's where you want to put it, you'd probably have a sweeping victory for them.
Well, when you say Americans are over that, are you referring to all the
they're over
business
the fact that you can't vote for a Jew because he's a Jew, you can't vote for a Catholic because he's a Catholic, you can't vote for a Negro because he's a Negro, you can't vote for a divorced man because he's divorced. They look at the man as a man and not anything other than what job he's supposed to do.
When and why do you think the American public came over this?
Because we're Americans. This is the most dynamic country in the world. This is a country where there's a constant revolution. Democracy is a constant revolution. And we are the only country in the world that is in constant revolution, trying to upgrade every person within our boundaries. And obviously, by our record, we're trying to upgrade and help up every willing person in the world. We've done it in Japan. We've done it in Germany. We're trying to do it in Vietnam. We've done it in Korea. We're willing to do it in Africa. We're trying our best to do it in South America.
In your opinion, who is the front runner for the Republican presidential nomination?
Well, I don't know who that would be now.
I see.
There's so many fine candidates that truly the Republican convention will be the only Democratic convention conducted this year.
Whom do you favor, may we ask, for the presidential nomination?
I just think any one of them is going to make a great president. Any one of the Republican candidates, with all the idiosyncrasies and shortcomings of all the other candidates heaped on his head as a burden to carry through his administration, would make far and away a greater president than the existing president of the United States. So we can't help but win. If we go to work. Now, I think, as I've stated last week, that we have an uphill fight because Mr. Politics, which is President Johnson, is not going to sit around and just not do something after that very exciting Republican convention in the Democratic convention. After all, how can he... He's got to do something, and he, as I stated this week, as you know, he probably will ask Mr. Humphreys to step aside and become Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, and will seemingly open up the convention to some measure of excitement. But actually, I think what he'll do is try to get the doves back in the Democratic coop by naming a military dove as the vice presidential candidate with him, which would, of course, be Major... which would be General James Gavin. And I think a lot of people agree with me. Well, I mean, who's the past master at grabbing the headlines? Who's the boy that throws the long ball in the 11th hour? Who is the very suckling child of politics? It's Mr. Politics, the President of the United States. You can fault him in anything you want to fault him in, but you can't fault him as Mr. Politics.
I haven't got any more questions. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I'm just looking forward this to being with you.
Well, thank you. We certainly are looking forward to it. Everybody's...
I think it's an outstanding example of real Americanism.
Well, thank you. Everybody's all excited, and they've already started making preparations and getting campaign headquarters and things like that already. So.
All right. Get my team going.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Well, thanks for talking to us, Governor.
Something that I want to ask you about, and it was almost so obvious that it escaped me. This is the coming mock convention next spring here at Washington and Lee, which, of course, will be a Republican convention.
Pathetically so.
Yes. Would you just like to comment on this for us and tell us what you think this does and what benefit it can be to the National Party?
Well, I think this only not only is good for... I think it's good for every student at Washington Lee to realize what is required to have such a thing. And they break it down by states, and they work at it. When they go in to vote, they're not voting for someone that they feel like personally should be the presidential nominee for the Republican Party, but how their state will vote when the national convention is held. They work with the state chairman of the different states, in by telephone and letters, and most of them have visited these men this past summer.
These are the actual state chairmen.
Yes, sir. Yes,
country.
Sir. The state chairman of the different Republican organizations, statewide organizations. They are in constant contact with these. This is the chairman of each state, the student here. And as you well know, their record certainly shows they do a pretty good job. How they'll do this year, I have no idea, because I personally don't think anybody could tell you who will be the Republican presidential and vice presidential nominee this year.
How closely does this convention and similar ones on the campus parallel the national convention? Are they set up and organized just about the same way?
Very definitely so, with exception of those who will be delegates. The delegates here are assigned, or the person asked to be a assigned to the California delegation, as an example, where, of course, in the national convention, he's elected to be a delegate,
right,
which is not the case here. But other than that, the similarity is identical, I would say.
Steve, there's been some rumor going around town that the mock convention might be canceled because Mr. Nixon is now the only candidate and far and away the strongest candidate, even if someone else should enter the race. And speculation has been there's no real need for a mock convention now. I was wondering if this is true.
No, I think this is more wishful thinking on the part of perhaps Mr. Nixon's campaign managers than anything else. The mock convention will be held as scheduled on May 3rd and 4th, and The only thing that'll change is, of course, the emphasis. We won't be as suspenseful over who the presidential nominee of the mock convention is going to be, but there certainly will be other considerations that'll make it just as interesting and exciting.
These other considerations will be what now?
Well, this year, as you know, Don, for the first time, we've had a platform committee. And under the leadership of Drew Coakley, the committee is working now to draw up what they think will be a reasonable facsimile of the Republican platform to be passed at Miami later this summer. And that will be discussed and voted upon at the convention. Of course, each student exercising his right to vote, voting, of course, as his real counterpart would under similar conditions at Miami. Now, so that the platform committee and its report will be of primary interest to us this time. Also, the race for vice president will, I think, take up a great portion of our time, and more than in previous years, and should be considerably more important than it has been at earlier mock conventions. I think you can see it's going to be a real race for vice president this time, and we're expecting that to be just as exciting as would the race for president be.
This sort of cancels out the other rumor that I heard then, that you may in fact switch to a Democratic convention with Senator McCarthy doing so well and with the entrance of Senator Kennedy.
Well, no, that's tempting, and it certainly has been suggested by, well, at last count, 37 people since last night. But it is not true, and however tempting it is, it's much too late to go cancel the arrangements we've made now for a Republican convention.